This is Tina Douglas, and you're listening to the Liam Photography Podcast with your host, my husband, Liam Douglas. Enjoy!
Greetings, everybody. You're listening to the Liam Photography Podcast. I'm your host, Liam Douglas, and this is episode 395 for Thursday, March 21st, 2024. So on this show, I try to always share some important information as it pertains to photography and the photography world as a whole. And today, I have a story from Petapixel that can certainly help you to keep your memory cards safer when storing them. Now, this particular story has to do with storing your memory card safely and not using potentially dangerous cases to store them in. Canadian wedding photographer Saraya Joy posted an interesting video on Instagram a couple of weeks ago, claiming that her foam SD card case had damaged and corrupted her SD memory cards. A corrupted card is a severe fear for photographers. So what exactly is happening here? As soon as Petapixel saw the video, we started digging around to learn more. The immediate question is, can static electricity damage and corrupt memory cards? And yes, it definitely can. That's why memory cards include anti-shock protections, including the plastic ribs that partially cover the exposed contact points, that enable cameras and computers to read and write data to and from SD cards. Quote, electrostatic discharge, or ESD, can cause problems with flash memory, but it has to be at a high enough level and it has to hit just the right spot in the memory to affect it, Mark Lewis explains. Vice President of Marketing and co-founder of ProGrade Digital tells Petapixel in an email. Lewis explains that SD card specifications precisely detail the ribs on the cards that provide a small barrier against ESD. This rib can help stop something from touching the card's interface and carrying a charge across a larger surface area. Quote, a best practice when handling SD cards is not to touch the exposed metal interface on the card. Handle the card only by the plastic. Use cards that have the fins specified by the SD Association spec, and use cards that have the industry certifications. Certainly, it is difficult to determine if you are carrying a positive charge before you touch your SD card. But following these best practices will help keep your valuable images safe, Lewis recommends. So are cases with foam problematic? Although Joy did not respond to Petapixel's request for comment based on her initial video, it seems that the offending case is either this precise model from Amazon or something very similar. Troublesome products are a dime a dozen on certain online retailers. The primary issue with this case and others like it on Amazon and other online retailers is that cards must be inserted vertically into foam. Quote, in regards to phones, they are usually prone to ESD, says Ian Stone, manager at Otherworld Computing, OWC, makers of memory cards, readers, portable SSDs, and other storage devices. Stone references a specific new phone, which is colored pink, that has special anti-static charge chemicals. However, the anti-static quality has a limited shelf life of about a year, depending on the condition of the air. Quote, in short, pink foams may protect the card in its first year when they are new. But after that, they actually work against the card holder by holding static charges. And that's a significant problem and risk. In the situation of an SD card holder that has cards being rubbed up and down against foam, like the troublesome one Joy shows, even special foam will eventually not only stop preventing static discharge, but may actually make the problem worse. If a strong enough electrostatic discharge touches the metal contacts of a memory card, it can certainly spell doom. So what can you do? SD and other memory card makers are aware of the risks of electrostatic discharge and are very careful about protecting cards as much as possible against damage. Quote, we test our SD cards in both operating and non-operating conditions against ESD. In non-operating conditions, we test each pin 5 times with a plus or minus 4K volts and air test the rest of the body 5 times in different locations with plus or minus 15K volts, which means kilovolts. In operating condition, because the pins are no longer accessible, we do air test the body 10 times in different locations with plus or minus 8K volts, Stone explains. Even with standards about ESD protection, there remains a risk of destructive discharge. People should never touch the metal part of their SD cards and should take reasonable actions to reduce the risk of discharge. Reasonable actions include safely discharging potential static before handling SD cards, akin to discharging static before pumping gas into a car, and avoiding risky practices like buying and using cheap, poorly designed SD card cases that they get online. While a case that promises protection against drops and drips may sound like a good idea, foam is certainly not your friend. If someone insists on a hard case for their SD cards, opt for one that doesn't store cards vertically inside the foam. Better yet, avoid foam altogether. For petapixels money, something like Think Tank Photo's Pixel Pocket Rocket card wallet is perfectly suitable. They were even just updated. In fact, multiple Petapixel team members have used these products for years and never had any issues with corrupted memory cards or static discharge. Now, for my thoughts, I agree 100% with this article, and it's definitely sound advice for those of you looking for a way to store and protect your memory cards. I've told photography students for years to never, ever buy a memory card holder that contains foam, because foam is prone to static. And ThinkTank's Pixel Pocket Rocket card holders are well-made and 100% safe for your memory card storage, as they are not using any of the materials that can cause risk to your cards. Now, ThinkTank is not a sponsor of this show. I'm just sharing my knowledge and information with you. And I do have quite a few of ThinkTank's products, including their Pocket Rocket card holders. So I just wanted to be totally transparent on that. Now, I also highly recommend the types of hard shell memory card holders that have rubber inside to hold your cards and keep them safe. Now, I've used these kinds of card holders for years and never had any problems with ESD. Another good option is to combine storage solutions. If you want to have the most protection, pick up some of the clear plastic SD card holders that you can buy on Amazon, and I have the link in the show notes so you can check them out for yourself. Now, these are only $7 for a set of 10 of them, and they allow you to store each card in a small plastic hard case, and then you can put all of these inside your ThinkTank Pocket Rocket for extra protection. They're basically just a little clear. Sometimes when you buy memory cards from a store or online, they come with these little clear plastic square cases that the individual memory card sits inside. But a lot of times they don't come with those. So if yours didn't come with them, you can use the link in the show notes and you can pick up a pack of 10. And then, like I said, put your memory cards, each one in one of those cases, and then put those cases in the Pocket Rocket just to give yourself double protection against ESD. Hey, extra protection can absolutely never hurt you. It can only be a good thing. So I highly recommend protecting your memory cards and all of your storage media as much as possible. Now I'm going to take a short break right here, and then I'll be right back. We hope you're enjoying this edition of the Liam Photography Podcast. You can visit the homepage at liamphotographypodcast.com for show notes and links. If you have questions, comments, or requests for topics or future guests you'd like to hear on the show, you can email me at liam@liamphotographypodcast.com. Also, be sure to check out the liamphotographypodcast.com Facebook group, and you can find me on Twitter at liamphotoATL. You can tweet the show, just insert the hashtag Liam Photo Podcast. And now back to the show. And we're back. Okay, so let's move on to the next topic for today's episode. New gear. Now, for some personal news this week, as many of you may or may not know, I've been using action cameras for quite some time now, and I've always had mainly GoPros. I usually had two GoPros in the Black Edition, and I also had bought the GoPro Max about 3 years ago when I started shooting content for video content for EA Games. Now, when it came to using GoPros, I had the media mods, the max lens mods, the light mods, and the display mods. So I always had a ton of action camera stuff to carry with me when I shot video for clients with these cameras. Now, I also, believe it or not, had 16 batteries, so I never had to worry about running out of power when out in the field. And I even bought the little metal doors that allow you to charge the cameras while the door is closed, which you can't do with the plastic ones that come on the GoPros by default. And that's extremely handy when you're shooting all day over an entire weekend. Now, in addition to my GoPros, I also had two of the DJI Osmo action cameras, a Model 3 and a newer Model 4. And all of these cameras were very good cameras. But as many of you know, we now have a new contender on the action camera market. That is the new king, and that is Insta360. Now, they're not a sponsor of the show, full disclosure. Insta360 came onto the market in 2015, and they have been crushing it with new and powerful action cameras of various types, from bullet or pill-shaped Go cameras to modular cameras like the One RS, to streaming web cameras like the Link, which has AI tracking, to their new GoPro killer, the Ace and Ace Pro. Now, I first bought the Insta360 X3 a few months back, and the reason I did, although I already had the GoPro Max, is I wanted some of the additional features and functionality that only the Insta360 X3 had, like the ability to automatically erase the selfie stick from your footage as you film, and other options, other features that I had. Now, once I bought the X3 and I set it up in Insta360 mobile app for iOS, I was hooked. Insta360's app is much more polished than either GoPro's or DJI's, and I love that I can select videos to download to my phone, and then as they're downloading, I can swipe the app away and leave it running in the background, and it'll continue downloading in the background so you can use your iPhone for other tasks. With both GoPro and the DJI app, you have to keep the app open and front and center on your screen or the downloads will stop. And that gets boring, having to sit there and watch the app download and not be able to do anything else on your iPhone until the downloads are done. Now, Insta360's app has fantastic editing features built in, which far surpass their competitors' apps. And they also offer a full-featured desktop app as well. Now, GoPro used to have a nice studio app, but they got rid of it. And now their current desktop app is so limited, I didn't even bother installing it on my Macs. With the new Ace Pro, you can even modify a few seconds of a video clip with AI-powered warp technology that can create some cool cartoon-like effects in your existing video footage. And you can even create your own custom looks by using keywords. Now, the Insta360 Ace Pro also sports a much larger sensor than the GoPro Hero 12 Black, with the Ace Pro having the same size 1 over 1.3-inch sensor as the DJI Osmo Action 4 camera does. Now, the Action 4 is better than the Hero 12 at shooting video in low light, as the Hero 12 totally sucks at it. But now, the Ace Pro comes along with the same size sensor, but with a 5-nanometer chip that allows it to do real-time noise reduction and video enhancements, so that the Ace Pro is even better at low light than the Action 4. I had both the Action 3 and 4, and although I parted with my Action 3, I opted to keep the 4, since it is a better camera and gives me a good second camera to complement the Ace Pro, and then I don't have to go out and buy a second Ace Pro for the times when clients hire me to shoot content for them again. Now, two other standout features of the Ace Pro is the ability, with its insanely powerful processor, to shoot 8K video, which is a first for any action camera. But it can also use its 1 over 1.3 inch sensor to shoot 48 megapixel stills in addition to the 8K video. And although the Action 4 has the same size sensor, it is limited to 12 megapixel stills, as it is using a much older tech at a 10 or 12 nanometer CPU. Ace Pro's 5 nanometer CPU also shoots by default in an HDR video mode for up to 30 frames per second. Anything past that and the function turns off. Now, the nice thing about this is that it's not the ugly looking HDR, but instead it just allows the camera to maintain great video quality with excellent colors while also saving your highlights and shadows. So the Ace Pro also has considerably more dynamic range than the GoPro or action cameras do. Osmo Action, I should say. Last new feature that really makes me love the Ace Pro is the fact that it is also has a larger touchscreen that can flip up so you can see it to frame your videos much more easily when you're using the camera for vlogging. And a lot of people use them for that. I do from time to time. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. It just depends. But both the Hero 12 Black and the Action 4 offer a front screen that is in full color and can be used for framing your shots, but they are very small screens. So they're a bit tougher to use and they are easily overpowered by harsh sunlight. Since the Ace Pro's large rear screen can flip up and become a front-facing screen, and it is super bright, it makes it so much easier to see on those really sunny days. So now I have the Insta360 Ace Pro and the X3, but it doesn't stop there, as I also ordered and have arriving later today my new Insta360 Go 3 camera as well. Now this camera can only shoot in 2.7K, and it has a smaller sensor than the Ace Pro, but still makes amazing video footage. And it is so small it can be used in many ways that larger action cameras cannot be. The Go 3 comes with a quote pod mount that basically turns it into a regular looking and sized action camera, and the pod charges the camera as well, but also includes a flip up screen like the Ace Pro to make it so much easier to use it for vlogging. The Go 3 also has a wide variety of unique magnetic mounts that you can use with it, such as a necklace mount, a hat clip mount, handlebar mounts, and many, many others, including a special tripod mount. Now, of course, being that the Go 3 has such a small form factor, they don't allow you to remove the battery, and there is no micro SD card slot either. You have to order the Go 3 with either 32, 64, or 128 gigabytes of built-in storage, but you can still pull the footage off using the 360 app. Now, I opted to go with the 64 gig model, as I'm only using the Go 3 for specific types of shooting or B-roll content. So it should be more than enough for my use case. And in addition, even though it can shoot 2.7K, I do all my YouTube videos in 1080p anyway, so shouldn't have anything to worry about as far as storage there. Now, another nice thing about the Go 3 is it has really strong magnets built into the back of the camera body, so you can easily mount it to anything metal for shooting your video and not have to use any mounts if you don't want to. Now, I'm sure that will come in extremely handy while I'm filming during our trip to New York, the Northeast, in April. We'll be visiting New York and Pennsylvania. Now, the last item I'm going to share about this week is my newest tripod that I just recently acquired, and that is the Peak Design Carbon Fiber Travel Tripod. Now, I had, of course, known about this tripod since it was first released in 2019, and I've always been enamored with the design and the super compactness of the entire tripod, since when fully collapsed, it can fit into a water bottle pocket on a camera backpack. I do also love the super compact, but very useful ball head they designed for this tripod, and it allows you to not only use Peak's capture clip plates on your camera for mounting to the tripod, and I have the capture clips since they first came out, and I just bought one of the new version 3 models, but you can also remove the two screw stoppers on each side of the ball head so you can use normal Arca Swiss plates or brackets as well. Now, the design of their bullhead makes it so quick and easy to raise and lower it, along with the center column, and also for leveraging the ball to move your camera around to get it level or to even shoot vertical. The ball head tightens and loosens using ring controls around the bottom of the ball head, and the top one also controls locking the plate in place so you know your camera is super secure. Now, for raising and lowering the center column, there's a good-sized magnetic knob similar to a large version of the Apple Watch's digital crown, and you pull it out and then turn it to loosen the column to raise and lower it, and then you turn it back to tighten it again and push the crown back into place where it latches using those magnets to keep it out of your way. When it comes to the design of the travel tripod, I not only love the compactness, but also the levers they use to deploy the leg sections. As with my large hands, I can easily unlatch all of them at once on each leg, and then do the same when I fold it back up after use. I like the fact that the travel tripod can be converted to give you a really close-to-the-ground tripod, but of course, it cannot hold a candle to how low to the ground my Platypod Extreme can get. The last two features that I really like are the Allen wrenches attached to one of the legs. Those are used for tightening the legs and also for taking the center column apart to make the tripod smaller or to attach the universal head plate. If you don't own one of these tripods, you might not know it, but the counterweight hook on the bottom of the center column also detaches, revealing a smartphone mount that can be used with the tripod as well for anyone that wants to use their iPhone for landscapes or panorama shots or even vlogging with their phone. Now, I had put off buying this tripod due to its fairly high price tag of $6 to $650, depending on where you buy it, versus $379 for the aluminum version. But with my chronic arm issues, I knew I needed the carbon fiber model. Now, I finally pulled the trigger as I recently parted with some other gear I no longer needed, so that allowed me to fund the tripod without pulling the money from my pocket. Now, I opted to buy the universal base plate so I can remove the Peak Design ball head and use my own Platypod Elite and Ergo on top of the tripod. And I also picked up their dampening feet that allow you to strip the tripod down to tabletop size. And I bought the spiked feet for when I need the extra grip into soil or snow or anything like that. Now, do I feel the Peak Design travel tripod was worth purchasing? Absolutely, as I needed a super compact yet tall tripod for when I travel by car or plane, and it is more than enough for all of my Fujifilm X cameras. Now, don't get me wrong, I still have a few larger tripods for when I don't need the total compactness or for when I want to shoot with my Fujifilm GFX 50R medium format system. Now, I'm sure the Peak Design travel tripod could handle my 50R as its max payload is 20 pounds, but the bottom section of the legs are very thin, so I'd prefer to use my more heavy-duty small rig or K&F concepts, or even my massive Leofoto carbon fiber tripods with the 50R. So that is pretty much it for this week's episode. Although I did also want to let you know that for those of you who prefer to listen to podcasts on YouTube, I have also added my RSS feed there, so now my entire show can be played from the YouTube site or the YouTube app as well. So what do you use for action cameras? And what tripods do you use? Feel free to leave comments on the Facebook group or on YouTube. If you have any questions about these topics or anything else related to photography or videography, you can leave those comments as well. I always enjoy hearing from my listeners and having a good discussion about our love for photography and videography.
Remember to check out the Liam Photography Podcast Facebook group. It is a private group, and you must answer a security question to join, which is the name of the host of the show, myself, Liam. And I've also opened it up to allow you to give the name of a previous guest on the show to show that you are a listener. Once you are in the group, you are free to post your own original work. I'm also the admin of the Fujifilm GFX 50R group, which is the largest group for the 50R on Facebook. If you own or plan to own the 50R, you can request to join that group, but you do have to answer two security questions to join that group. You can find my work at liamphotography.net and follow me on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at liamphotoATL. If you like abandoned buildings and history, you can find my projects at forgottenpiecesofgeorgia.com and forgottenpiecesofpennsylvania.com.
All right, that's going to wrap up episode 395 of the Liam Photography Podcast. I want to thank all of my listeners once again for subscribing, rating, and reviewing the show anywhere you might be listening to it. If you're not currently a subscriber of the show, why not? It's absolutely free, doesn't cost you anything but a second of your time to press that subscribe button, so do it now and not miss any of my future episodes. Also, stop by the Liam Photography YouTube channel, subscribe to the channel, turn on all notifications so you don't miss any of my new videos that come out every week, and feel free to leave any comments or questions in the YouTube video sphere. So I'd be more than happy to answer any of your questions. Feel free to leave them in there or in the Facebook group for the podcast show. I would love to hear from you and always enjoy discussing cameras, photography, videography, and technology related to these fields. All right, that's it for this one. I will see you all again next Thursday. We'll be right back.